Hey there, you're listening to Tour Punisher. I'm Noah Dunham.
And I'm Ryan Soley, and today you're going to be hearing stories of broken down vans.
And the woes and wonder of starting your own all-ages music venue.
And surprising hillbillies.
This is Tour Punisher. Hey everybody, welcome to Tour Punisher, the show that reveals the occasional joy, but mostly the pain of taking your band on tour.
Today we're going to talk to two local Portland musicians. The first is Todd Fatal. And Todd used to run the Meow Meow back in the day, which is kind of like the premier Portland all-ages club. And we're also talking to Jesse Bettis, who's been in a bunch of bands around Portland. His current band is called New Move, and he's also been in a band called Oh Captain, My Captain. Welcome to Tour Punisher.
Welcome. We're very excited to have all of you 10 people that are probably listening to this. This is our first ever episode.
So if you have kids in the car or at home, this is not for them. This is something with lots of swears.
Lots of swears, and in fact, when we wanted to cut, when we were first recording this, we used a cut word that is probably not appropriate for children.
It's not the most inappropriate word, but it's pubes.
Pubes. I mean, they'll eventually learn what it is, but hopefully, for your sake, if you have kids, not until you're about like, until they're about like 10 or 11.
You should be the one to tell them about pubes, not us.
Yeah. So, just for a little context, Brian, where did this show come from?
Well, there's a ton of, I spent many years on the road with my band, The Builders and the Butchers, and there's a ton of great stories, mostly horrible stories, but in retrospect, hilarious stories, but horrible at the time, and we didn't want to let those die. And my thought and our hope was that other bands have similar hilarious stories of woe, and we wanted to share those and let people know. And also give people like a little behind-the-scenes look as to what touring is really like.
Totally. And from what I can tell, at least from this first episode that we recorded, they're kind of cautionary tales.
Mostly cautionary tales. Mainly the point of this whole show is just like never start a band in your first place in the first place.
So also just a little explanation. I mean, I personally don't think, you know, a good title needs explanation, but why Tour Punisher? What's the meaning of the title of the show?
I think a lot of people go into going on the road with a lot of feelings like it's going to be amazing and the best time ever and super fun, and they don't realize how actually hard it is. And so the punishment, the tour punishment, is just life on the road, and that's the whole. It's the whole thing. It's not getting good food, not sleeping well, touring for the first time, losing money, losing your job, losing your girlfriend, usually, those kinds of things.
Yeah, so basically it's punishing musicians for having the hubris that they are a good enough band and strong enough people to pack a bunch of people into a van and drive across the country.
Yep.
It's basically the universe being like, oh, you're getting punished.
Exactly.
Great. Okay, well, I think we've explained the shit out of this, so why don't we dive in to the episode?
To the actual shit.
To the actual shit. Welcome to Tour Punisher. Ryan, do you want to maybe introduce our first guest?
Sure. This is my friend and longtime crazy amazing fella, Todd Fatal.
Hello.
Welcome.
Todd, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, great. So, just starting out with some basics, like, who are you? What music projects have you played on? What's something that you're up to lately that you want people to know about?
Oh, that's a good question. I am a husband of 19 years to my wife, which makes sense if you think about it. And then... I am a father of two children. My son Zion is a budding musician. He is 17, and my daughter Brennan is an amazing chef and baker, and she's trying to do a lot of different things, and she's also an amazing singer, although she won't let you hear her voice. She's 15. Those are the main things that I'm really, you know, my focus is in right now. I'm also in, I'm going to PSU to be a classroom music teacher after having run a concert venue called Meow Meow in the early 2000s. Did about 1,100 shows with that venue. And around that time, I was doing music, all different types of music. Before that, though, I had a couple of interesting bands, one of which was a all Star Wars tribute band. We dressed up and sang songs about Star Wars. So, yeah, that's... And I mean, I've done a couple of tours and booked a few tours. So yeah, that's who I am.
So Ryan, who else is joining us today?
Our good friend and amazing local musician and man about town, Jesse Bettis, is in the house.
Hi.
Hey.
It's me, Jesse. What, yeah. What's up?
Jesse, thanks for joining us. So Jesse, what are your projects? What are you working on, or what have you worked on?
Yeah, my band is New Move. Lately I've been working though on a lot of sort of collaborative, compilations. One I'm doing right now is with Misplaced Screen Printing. As you all probably know, they do screen printing for a lot of bands in town. They used to be, neighbors of mine and Ray's. So yeah, just sort of pulling in different Portland artists and co-producing a bunch of unreleased songs in a style that's distinct for just that compilation. So it's been really fun sort of exploring fun new directions for different bands and collaborating with that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Todd talked a little bit about why he kind of rolled out Meow Meow. What was your kind of like impetus or starting New Move?
I mean, I don't really know. So I've played in bands for a really long time, probably since I was 15, so almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. That right before that, I was in a band called Oh Captain, My Captain, and I was at a point where the band had broken up, and it was probably the first time where I didn't have a band. So I just sort of wanted to dig into songwriting and try to explore and understand songs that I really like and artists that I really like and get to the bottom of what it was I liked about them. So New Move sort of started as an exercise in songwriting, really, and changing the way that I do that based on what I learned. Mm-hmm. So sort of developing, like trying to understand the pop formulas of songwriting and developing my own and like mm-hmm. just playing with all of that, you know?
Cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
Cool. And so have you been touring with New Move lately?
Yeah, we did our first tour in June. We're going to do like a Northwest thing in January. But until recently, we haven't really been hitting the road a lot. But that's what's like on the forefront, is playing out of town a lot as much as possible. Yeah.
Are you guys to a place where you would, given the opportunity, do that full time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
I've always, like, this is something that, like, a lot of people who talk to bands don't talk about, but that point, that, like, the point of no return, or the point of where you really mess your life up,
yeah.
I like to call it, is really interesting, and where is that for you?
Yeah, what is it take to, like
to say
have the tipping point like reach that. I think it's just getting older and still wanting to do it just as much, if not more so, than anything else I've ever done. You know, like when you're younger, you're in your 20s, you just try everything. Like you know, everything you do is sort of a party, and nothing really holds weight. But now it's like, wow, I'm going to be in my 40s in 10 years, and I really, really love doing this. I really love collaborating with all of my friends. I love the Portland music community. So, like, how can we go all in and not just like as a touring band, but just like as collaborators and as people who can add and help facilitate just an area of the community that can be rich with like growth and inspiration and creativity, you know?
Totally.
Yeah, so similar, I'm interested.
So the hangover has started hurting more, basically.
Yeah.
I got to do something cool before it, because I'm going to die soon.
That's right.
That's the right answer.
You gotta strike while you still have a liver.
Yeah.
Right?
Huh.
So, yeah, similarly, Todd, I wanted to know, did Meow Meow start as like a side hustle kind of project, and then you eventually went full time with it, or what was the balance, the work life balance there?
Well, I was I was asked to be a part of it, and I said no, and wasn't really interested in doing that. In fact, I had just gotten married a couple of years prior, and some friends of ours said, you know, this is an amazing opportunity, and you might want to look at the idea of, when you jump into the chaos, so I was thinking about the chaos theory and the chaos model, where they kind of talked about this as this like funnel, and you're getting really stretched thin, and then at one point everything changes, and you come out the other side, and you're not the same, and nothing's the same, and that's how we grow, and that's how life happens. You know, we don't just shrivel up and die if we want to continue to shed, you know, past skin and go into new things. That's the way it works. I am in my 40s, but in my 20s, I had a lot of crazy ideas, and I didn't see any reason to stop those, but definitely starting family, getting married, it felt like, okay, well, I want to do right by this person. And I think that, that was what my first intention was. But then when we got asked to do the club, it was in really poor timing because my son was born in March. The club started in April of the same year. So my wife was staying at home with our newborn son, and I was coming home every night at 2 a.m. That's when real rubber hits the road, my friends, is, you know, and we had just actually, in 2001, we bought a house right off of Mississippi, which is apparently a good time to buy a house in this town. And there were, you know, people that had known the previous owners banging on the door while I was at the club. This is Rocky. We want to talk to Andre. Thanks, Rocky, but Arnie's not here anymore. So those kind of things happened on a regular basis. So I think for me, you know, right when I might have had that chance to really be responsible and you know, doing a great job and being the father and the husband I should have always been, was when I started the club. So it was not, you know, it wasn't the flip side. And what was really cool about that was you know, we went through a lot together to try to make that work, and it did work for quite a long time. So I have a different idea about, you know, how things, you know, can pan out when you're just being, you know, when you're taking a risk in any point in time in your life. I think you just, it's always going to be somewhat calculated, but somewhat like, who knows what's going to happen here. And it's, In my case, it's always kind of worked out at the end, you know, to even out, you know. So I'm, and that's kind of what I tell my kids too. It's like, you know, worst comes to worst, you know, you still can come and hang out with us. You can still live with us. You do what you want to do. Do what you're going to do. And we encourage you to take risks. And my son is specifically going to move to California next year, which is blowing my mind. And his plan is to take a gap year to follow music, you know, being a musician. And because of the experiences that I've had, I've like, yeah, exactly. I can't imagine what it would have been like and, you know, what kind of advice I'd be giving him had I not taken those risks. So,
yeah. Getting a little bit, just a little bit back to the meow meow. There's one thing you wanted people to take away when leaving the meow meow, like somebody who saw a show there, it's the space you created and did, like what's the thing you wanted people to take away from that?
Well, I got asked to do this all ages movement project, did a thing. They're from Seattle. They asked my friend Kevin asked me to do this panel up there, and the question was basically, you know, what made Meow Meow different than other clubs maybe that you would have been to? And I said, I feel like, honestly, I could say that I loved the people coming in. I loved the people that I worked the door most of the time. I mean, there were times I didn't, but I worked the door a lot of the times when I was there, which I don't think most club owners really bothered to do that. But I really was thankful that people were coming. And people were being, you know, coming to the door, and they weren't coming to see me, but I was. So I think that made it different. Just the feeling that I'm glad you're here.
Yeah. I see the owner of the Doug Fur working the door like every show. So it's not like
so that. Yeah, you're right.
He's like doing the tickets.
He's stamping the hands and then he holds their hand and goes, thank you. Thank you.
Mortimer Douglas Fur is his name, actually.
Wow. Not very many people have the guts to name their club after them.
I know. Yeah. And who thought that was a guy? But it is.
Douglas Furthington.
Furthington.
Also shortened the last name.
And his dog Spot. Yeah. Thanks for getting it. Thank you.
Like, everybody here are funny people. Everybody in Builders and Butchers are like, you guys are like the funniest guys I know. Most of the funniest people, men and women I know, are musicians in town. So it's like, why aren't we like doing funny stuff on the side? Let's do that.
Why are musicians funny? Because I agree, like all my friends who are musicians are the funniest people I know, funnier than most any comedian I know. Like as far as like off the cuff, we did a 3-hour drive from Seattle to Portland, and I literally was in physical pain and exhausted from laughing so hard. Yeah. For 3 hours, I was laughing straight.
Yeah.
And what is that? Why?
I think a lot of musicians and comedians, stand-up comedians, people who tour, they all have that similar thing where they're on the road and their life is the best and worst simultaneously. And artistic people are generally sad. Deep down sadness, and the only way to deal with it is by making jokes about stuff.
Oh, that's it. It's sadness. Humor are the same thing. Oh, yeah. So we're all just really sad.
See, the laughing is just to cover up the deep, dark pain that we all feel.
Right.
I also think about the touring aspect of things, you know, it's easy for you to be more reflective about those moments, I think, to be able to juxtapose a really shitty moment with a really great moment that happened and like, oh, you know, make fun of just how can you believe that we had this and right after this. And it's like when you're in the same town, the same damn town, the same damn job, and you're like, that's all you have. Nothing. You're not going to be funny about it. You're like, oh, God, get me out of this. God. But when you're touring, you're able to see all of the funny. And in fact, I think sometimes when we go out, we're collecting those kinds of things on purpose, you know?
Well, and that stuff comes up later because it's always funny in hindsight.
Totally.
You know what other profession I just realized is really funny? Is like ER doctors. Every time I've interacted with an ER doctor, I'm not kidding, they're so funny because they see like, oh my God, this guy is literally falling apart.
Yeah.
See, it's like you have to make a joke.
It's the darkness.
When you're that close to death every day at your job.
Yeah.
The worst time of my life, I went to my doctor and my brother had died of cancer. My dad had like a stroke and I had my grandpa had a triple bypass. And I was telling him all this stuff because he was asking, how's your family's medical history? And I was describing it to him, and he goes, you know what you need? You need a new family.
What doctor says that?
That's so good.
Really, he's right, though. He's right.
I needed a new family.
He's concerned about your health. Oh, you know, God. What can you say?
And then you're like, can you give
can you prescribe that
for me? Yeah.
And 5 minutes later, I was curled up on his lap.
little Todd was reborn.
Yeah, but that's an interesting train of thought there, Ryan. I mean, I think that's also probably a good segue into like our next little bit to talk about, which is like getting a little bit down to the nitty gritty of touring.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys have been talking about it, how it's both a grueling experience, but also sometimes probably a really fun, interesting experience. So I want to hear a little bit more about the tales of woe and the tales of ecstasy.
Literally tales of ecstasy.
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe both emotionally and maybe substance related.
Yeah.
So Jesse, you know, we can go back and forth between you guys, but like, when was like the first time you went on tour?
First time I went on tour was 2008, I think, 2009. I had a band called Oh Captain, My Captain, and our first tour, maybe it was our second tour, but we drove to the East Coast and decided we needed to do an East Coast tour. Having never played the East Coast before, I still haven't played the East Coast, like almost 10 years later.
That bad, huh?
So, no, I love it, but... You know, it was like the most ill-conceived strategy, I guess, for,
so you guys
for exposure.
Yeah, you guys didn't do dates on your way out?
No, we drove straight from Portland to Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, it was like 26 hours straight.
Talk about what happens, because there's something that happens in the...
But it was so fun.
That drive was fun?
Yeah.
Man.
Well, how many people were you with?
Four other.
What kind people? Of car did you drive in?
Oh man, it was a Ford Econoline.
So it was a big van, fairly big.
Big van, 15 passenger.
So you had all your gear, four dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys want to talk about now? No, well, just kidding.
Was it F-150 or 250 or what? No, what's the gas mileage?
Well, just
on
the,
that?
You know, I think getting the vehicle information is important because it's like it's all about comfort in that kind of ride.
I was gonna say that's important. That's important because every van that I ever saw, they was a different build out, and I want to know which particular build out for sleeping arrangements.
Hell yeah!
How did that look?
Oh yeah,
this is important.
That was actually where we were. Equipped somehow. Well, never been on tour. There was a like a flat, you know,
like a loft,
like a loft built over the back seat, mm-hmm. with a pad on it.
Nice. How's that pad looking? Clean?
Oh, I still have it. it was never clean. It's certainly unclean now.
Okay, so I don't know if this is a correct time to mention this, but I feel like the van story that I have is kind of better than all of you.
You're burning.
Hit it.
You're gonna
hit it.
So we had I think it might have been an Econoline, I'm not sure, but we were given this Econoline for $1,500 because that's a great deal, especially in the 90s. And on our tour in 97,
what band was this, by the way?
This was a band called Sapo that I did with my brother. And we did a 9-date, 10,000-mile tour. the tour manager for Star Flyer 59 was the guy who set the tour up, and we just jumped on as an opener. And I think it cost us per show to be on the thing, but we thought that was a good idea, right? So the second to the last show, we had to kind of just plow through to get to. I think it was Tupelo, Mississippi, potentially. And then our last date was going to be in Dallas. And so we were making this trip from Tupelo to Dallas, and we were just barreling. And we could tell that there were some major problems with the van at this point, and there was smoke billowing into the van. And we were going there, and we kept going until we got to Little Rock. And it was Sunday afternoon in Little Rock, and we completely broke down. I don't know if you know anything about Little Rock. On Sundays, turns out most people are in church all day long. All businesses were closed, so there were no way for us to get to, you know, any rental situation. So we finally found this one U-Haul outside of town that was open, but there was no, you know, pass-through door or anything like that. It was just two people in the cab, two people in the back.
In the back
with all the gear.
Smuggling them style.
So my brother and my guitarist, Billy, decided that they were going to go and just be in the back from Little Rock to Dallas. And that was probably the worst thing ever. And they were like hallucinating when we almost got to the venue, because every time we'd stop, they'd see the little lights up at the top of the along line. They were almost there. Was almost there. And when we got to the venue, it was literally the time that it was time for our set. So we roll the doors up, and they're like, "We got to get up on the stage." They're like, "Just give me a second." Anyway, they were delirious.
They're like deprivation. They were. Now you pay for that. That's like floating.
Yeah, sensory yeah. Of deprivation.
That's therapy. That's what people pay for therapy.
Okay, so they should be thanking me. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right. So okay, well, on the same train of thought, Jesse, can you think of, you know, name the tour that it was on, like worst travel accommodations or like worst travel experience?
Okay, so it's the same tour. We've got.
Todd's? That's crazy.
Same tour as Todd's.
What the hell?
Yeah.
He was in the back with the gear.
He was six.
I was under the van just clinging onto the axle the whole time. So we started it in Cleveland. We had five dates. Say what you will about Cleveland. It's a motherfucker of a city, but it's an amazing city.
I'm not saying anything about Cleveland. Ryan, you shut the fuck up. Let him tell a story.
I like is when somebody says, say what you will, and then nothing is said.
Yeah. No one. but we played all over. We played North Carolina, Washington, D.C., New York, Brooklyn. So maybe not all over. It was basically that. And then our last show was in North Carolina. We played with a band called The Love Language, who are our label mates. Actually, Bladen County Records. We were all label mates.
Represent.
So after that, that was definitely the highlight of the show, or of the whole tour. Amazing turnout. It was their album release show. And then we stayed in the forest somewhere in North Carolina. Oh, there were like deers running through their backyard. They had this beautiful home, like in the woods, in the country, with a recording studio. We all stayed up really late, drank all the beer,
like
did all 10, the drugs,
10:30,
sang all the songs.
11 o'clock.
Yeah, 11 nice. O'clock. And then we piled back into the van. And then from there, we were sort of riding high from the experience of the whole tour, because it was insane. It was my first time being in New York, being on the East Coast at all, so it was pretty amazing. So from North Carolina, we cross over to Virginia. And then once we got to West Virginia, the weather changed from, it was really sunny. It was amazing. It was like fall, like late fall. And then we crossed into West Virginia about 5 minutes in, dark clouds just rolled in. I'm not exaggerating. And it started hailing. And then we heard a rattle in the van, and our transmission went out. In a small town, shout out to Princeton, West Virginia. You know what it is. So, you know who you are.
Say what you will.
Say what you will about Princeton, West Virginia. It's a motherfucker of a town, but...
Hell yeah, man.
This is a town of population of 1,200, I think. They had four mega churches that couldn't hold...
Like, one holds 1,200
people. One holds probably 2,000.
Yeah.
The entire town... Yeah. The entire town is like... Basically, there's a large truck stop with Applebee's, gas station, our hotel. That is Princeton, West Virginia. It's like a large truck stop and then four mega churches. Some of the best fried fish po' boy I've ever had, though, in this little shack. But, yeah, we stayed in the hotel. We were stranded there for 3 days. We had to buy a new van. It was crazy. And the next day we went to the like transmission shop, had like a deliverance moment, you know, because the cab driver's like, y'all are them boys from Portland, huh? We're like, yeah, we're from Portland. Like,
local celebrities.
How'd you find out? That was like 3 a.m. It's like 11 a.m.
I'm sorry.
Word gets round.
Yeah, it got around fast. So we go to the transmission shop. We meet these two nice ladies. I'd have to say the nicest people I met in Princeton, West Virginia. It was me and Josh Spacek, who you guys know, who is a singer of Monarchs. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Josh. He lives in France now.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, he is a son of a bitch.
Say what you will about him.
wait. Pubes.
Pubes.
Cut. Say what you will about Josh Spacek. Anyway.
That was perfect.
You guys are going to leave all that in, right?
Not a dead edit.
So while Mathen and Joe Bowden are up in Appalachia looking for the van, which we did drive back, luckily, we're stuck at the transmission shop, and these two ladies... We're just waiting, and they're like, y'all want to watch Twilight? Twilight had just come out. We're like, I don't know. They're like, it'll make you want to fall in love with a vampire. We're like, all right, yeah, put it on, you know. They were eating their lunch, and we watched Twilight together on a love scene in the middle of this transmission shop. And then piled into a much smaller, yet somehow more badass van. They've got the vans in Princeton, West Virginia. It was like a conversion van from the maybe early 80s. So it was like all captain's chairs.
Yeah.
Runner lights and everything. We were crammed in that thing.
Oh, captains, my captain's chairs. I just had to do that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God, I hate you so much. That was good.
Right. Yeah.
Say what you will about
dads.
Dads. And then we drove straight from Princeton, West Virginia, all the way back to Portland without stopping. Oh, and just
you.
Best tour ever.
Another time, but yeah. These are the things we do.
Yeah, so I think what I've personally learned from this segment is that vans are going to break down. Like, that's like the exception is them not breaking down, I assume, right?
I would say this is unsolicited advice. If you pay out your band a percentage, put a percentage, if there's five members in a van, just pretend the van is a sixth member and put the money that sixth member would have into the bank, because that will cost you.
You'll spend that
undoubtedly on your van, if not more.
Dude, you're just going to give this kind of advice away for free?
That's right.
You're crazy.
Well, people will be paying for this podcast.
Yeah, you got to subscribe for this,
99
right?
cents to subscribe.
Yeah.
We'll make millions.
Yeah.
We'll
make tens.
Okay, well, let's we'll make tens. Thanks for listening to Tour Punisher. This show was brought to you by
New Move. Not just a band anymore. The next time you're feeling a little blocked up, hit your pharmacy aisle and pick up some New Move.
Okay, great. So we're going to move on to...
lightning round?
Yeah, a lightning round, as it were. We're going to basically do... we're going to ask you guys questions about, like, worst/best things that you've experienced on tours.
Mm.
You know, so, like, worst, you know, meal you can think of, that kind of crap.
And if you don't have one, that's okay. And I can kind of prime these a little bit, because they're a little bit off the...
If you don't have one, just say pubes and move on.
Just say the sure. the full sentence pubes.
Worst experience
on.
Pubes. Best sure. experience.
The safe word is pubes and move on.
Except for if the answer is actually pubes.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The craziest sound guy in Waco, Texas.
His name was Pubes.
Pubes McClarty.
Pubes Jorgensen.
worst meal. Pubes.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Worst bathroom.
Say what you will about pubes.
Worst payment for a show. Pubes.
All right. Well, let's hop.
What?
Worst sound guy. 68 billion pubes in one scarecrow outfit.
Saw that on Etsy for sale.
The pubes crow. Yeah, it's, he's not a good sound man.
Noah hates me. Oh god. All right.
All right. Great. Let's hop in here.
Okay. So, notoriously on tour, sound people are weird and crazy and anal and strange. Are there any that stick out? And if so, what did they do? What were some weird things they said and did? And caveat to, we're planning on having a sound person in to like defend or talk about
or
why
confirm.
They're weird. Confirm.
Yeah.
At some point, but anyway, any strange run-ins?
Todd, you got any come to mind?
And feel free to name names.
You know. Yeah, right.
Pubes, Jorgensen.
He's gonna bring in a normal sound person to be like, nope, those guys are weird.
So, but the thing is, so the shows that I've ever done really run the gamut, which I'm sure you've seen this, where it's like, you know, where it's everything from you know, you're wanting a sound person. Well, there's the board. To somebody who's been doing it for, you know, and has no idea what you're about, and then trying
right.
to, so
yes,
so I mean personally, I've done more shows where we're just doing our own sound, which it is a pain in the ass, but it's like it's actually those are sort of my favorite shows to
sure.
run. I would say that for a time, I was doing shows for like festivals. With about 17 people in the band, and every sound person that would see us come up on stage would be just like,
they would literally
just throw their hands up in the air, right? And we're like, look, it's not that difficult. I mean, I understand, you know, in your mindset, this is like we're wanting all these monitor mixes and all this stuff, and I'm sure all day long you've been dealing with that shit. But we just want it to sound good out front. We don't really need it to sound good for ourselves. And so I think to have people just assume the worst at first has always been like, so we did this tour with that group in the UK, and we were playing for like a really early Sunday morning show, and we came up on stage and it was like 9 or 10 of us, and it was a really motley crew of what we were asking the mic up and stuff, and they were like laughing and walking off stage, and we're just like, no, we just need your help, you know. I mean, we weren't yeah. trying to be prima donnas at all, and I think that kind of shit really bums me out. Just like, I don't know what we're, you know. Yeah,
so sounds like a bunch of pubes Jorgensens to me.
They're everywhere.
They're yeah. everywhere. The pubes, they
That's
are.
That's one I've noticed.
Well, to me, like, if you were to equate being a sound person to, like, a doctor, like, a doctor wants, like, look at this person's almost dead, and I'm going to do this crazy 12-hour surgery and make this person alive
yeah.
and do this crazy 8 bypass, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
I feel like sound people should look at, like, your setup as the same kind of problem. Like, we're going to make this happen, and
right.
I'm going to be the guy to do it.
Yeah.
But instead, it's always like, ugh, you mean I have to do my job?
That's so true. Yeah.
Jesse, do you have any memorable...
there's... It's tough because... I hate to say it this way, but the ones who stand out are the ones who are actually, like, really amazing.
Right.
Because they're... There are too many pube Jorgensens out there. Oh, wait, pubes.
Pube?
Fill in name blank here. There are too many. That experience with, like, the jaded sound guy is universal.
Yeah.
It's like, you get that push and pull, like, with the sound guy. And if you're a band, like, worth your salt, and you come humble and respect and appreciate what the sound guy is doing for you, which the sound guy should be your best friend. Like, yeah. You want to be friends with the sound guy as soon as possible, if you can, you know, because they're helping you, and their job is hard, and they've never heard your band before, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. I guess it's a little bit of advice, like, but one time in LA we played at a show called the High
That
High.
Being said, that being said,
I'm Pubes Jorgensen. I kid you not. Pulled the plug on the board mid set. No, I'm just kidding. But the sound guy for the hi-hat in LA, I'd recommend anybody play there. That guy is amazing. We had a bunch of, like, difficulty with the, like, the booking and some of the artists on the bill. The headliner pulled out, like, the day before. Mm. We had the middle slot. They were headlining, and they were like, well, we can't play unless we play at 10 p.m. We're like, yeah, you're the headliner. That's why, like, we booked the show with you to headline. And they pulled out, and the booker got mad at us for not giving them... not headlining the show and giving them the slot, you know. It's like, if I'm going to headline, then we'll still headline at 10 p.m. because that's when our few LA friends are coming out.
Right.
You live here. All you got to do is wake up and then do this show.
Right.
Whatever.
I feel like we need to have a segment later on the show that's just called "So the Headliner Pulled Out."
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Well, let's move on to a different topic on our best/worst moments.
Also, I really like the sound guy. Not to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
The sound guy at the place downtown? Not the Rosen, but it's like super old.
The Crystal Ballroom.
The Paris Theater?
Star Theater.
Oh, Star Theater. What? It's a venue again.
It is old.
I used to pay to play at that again. When I was in high school. Yeah. It's terrible, but
oh, yeah.
I was like,
but they had a cool purple curtain. I remember I had friends who played there in high school
right.
as well.
I know what you're talking about.
And,
cool
but they
space.
Still had all the dicks over the wall, like the dicks that would like zigzag all over the wall.
When you're in high school, it's like a dream to play at that place. You're like, there are more dicks than I could draw.
Yeah.
Also, we used to call them dricks.
Drawn dicks.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Star Theater sound guy. I wish I could remember his name because I was so impressed with his attitude and how good and how fast he was. He was like the anti-sound guy.
I know that guy.
Hero. Yeah, what is his name?
I don't remember his name, but he found stuff for like my guitar. I was missing guitar hardware, and he's like, I think we got this somewhere, and like hooked me up with stuff. He was amazing.
Yeah, he texted me like that night, like, you know, your guys left this and this here. It's like, that's awesome.
You're not going to steal it?
We should give it an award to like the best sound person. Like,
that's right.
Yeah, we should have that guy.
We should have
show.
A trophy that we give out once a month.
That's a better idea than talking shit on him.
Yeah.
Talking shit on him is going to backfire.
Wow, so I think the takeaway for me of this last conversation is that like good karma is being good to the sound guy no matter what.
Be nice to your fucking sound guy.
All right,
I have one. I mean, these are not as rapid fire as I was thinking, but
these are more like molasses fire.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. Molasses fire burns well.
Did you just milk yourself?
So
it's a test run, you know.
That's
the quote, the takeaway quote right there. Sorry.
So the question I want to ask next is about fans, and so it would be basically like whichever comes up first for you. I wish we had a buzzer, but like. Whichever one comes up first for you, like either worst fan moment that you can think of, or like, or best, or like.
I think we should include Ray with this one.
Oh yeah. We can include Ray on this one too.
I'm still standing behind you.
Okay, good.
You're
so tight.
You're like 30 feet away. You look so small from here.
But you're so tall up close.
You're so much taller.
Don't come
than
up
us.
Close. Don't come up close. So yeah, if it comes to mind, like. What's like a moment where you like maybe a fan either like maybe scared the shit out of you or like was just being like overly like affectionate to like a way that like maybe made you get goosebumps or whatever, or maybe goosebumps in a good way, like they were being overly affectionate and you were like, wow, this is amazing, I've never felt like anybody's appreciated me this much.
I had a fan dick moment where basically they just whipped it out, you know. No.
They?
No, yeah, them. I was. I'm going to be pronoun specific in that situation. Fuck no, yeah. Way. I'm going to be. Come on, it's 2017. Let's do it.
Man of his times.
Tell you. So 1997, when we were on that tour, right after the U-Haul got to the venue, so we had just literally jumped in did the set, started with the first song, and my low two strings on my guitar both broke, and I had gotten the entire tour with no strings breaking, and so I had to use the opener's guitar, and it was this tiny guitar that I could, you know, it was like a child's guitar, and so I would I'd immediately be playing so hard that it would go out of tune, and I'd have to tune it every single time, and I'm looking around, I'm like, oh my gosh, it must be this, you know, I keep going out of tune, it must be this funky guitar. And so this was a church show that was put on by a church, which was not the norm for the tour. But apparently there were some people that were very sensitive to profanity there, because later on after the show, this particular individual came up to me and said, excuse me, I just wanted to figure out where, did you say this fucking guitar? And I said,
oh, no.
And this was after driving, you know, the U-Haul from Little Rock, and the entire day we had. And I'm like, no, man, I didn't say that. And in fact, you know, it doesn't even matter. And so, will you sign my poster? And I'm like, yeah, here we go. Have a funky good day.
That's like really an awkward thing to, yeah. So,
Do you have one? Or are we going to Ray? You got one too? This is going to be a round robin, except for myself.
We all have a lot of these.
Lay it down.
But I mean, that's what
I think we should do
about.
Rapid fire between Ray.
And it wasn't good. It wasn't good.
So the time that I remember of this ilk was, this is our last tour where we had been in Germany. And if you've never had a European burrito, they don't know what to do. And it's all wrong. So it's kind of like stewed, like beef stew in a tortilla shell, but then there's no way that it's not soggy and falling apart. It's just disgusting. It's no way.
And they serve it with balsamic vinegar and olive oil.
Like, yeah, it's like all wrong. It's
they
all
don't
wrong.
Know what a burrito
they
is.
They don't know what a burrito is. So I had saved, when we got our burritos.
No one has Pinterest?
No one has Pinterest. It's all wrong. So when we got our burritos, it was too close to the show. I was like, I'm going to eat my burrito after we play. Time the show's over, it's in Cologne, Germany, show's over, and I'm starving, and there's nowhere to eat my burrito. I have to like go outside with it, and by this time it's just literally soup, and there's not a fork, there's not a napkin, there's like nothing, and I just got done with the show, and I'm trying to eat this burrito, and I can't because it's literally falling apart in my face. I'm shoving it in, and it's like all over my face, and there's no napkin, and I just farted. And this girl walks up from the show, and I'm literally covered in burrito, and I had just farted. And my hands are covered in burrito.
They're covered in stew, really.
They're covered in stew, and she's like, I just want to tell you how amazing I think you are.
I literally
every orifice is like just wet with something. I'm just like thank you so much. How the fuck is this happening?
Great. Okay. Great. I think we have time for this, so let's do one of these. Yeah. I'm thinking maybe just this one because it'll be kind of fun.
Yeah.
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 Todd. Is there, what's your ultimate fantasy band to tour with? Like, if what's the number one echelon if they asked you tomorrow? Living or dead?
Like, living or dead?
Beethoven.
No, like your band, band.
You're in the band or your band is going on tour with
your band
band
is opening for Beethoven.
I hate. Yeah, the problem with not being like performing. Well, I don't know. When you're opening or with a band, you usually maybe there's those moments where you could actually sing with them or something.
Right.
Dang. I haven't really given it that much thought, but I would say some soul band. Like, I mean, like I'd love like Sly and the Family Stone. Yeah. I think that would be really cool to just be a backup singer for Sly and the Family Stone. If, you know, like after having a few dates and they're like, hey, you know, if you want to come up, you know, just come up for, you know.
Yeah.
It's my Tom Waits auxiliary percussionist moment in my dreams. You can come up and play the conga. I never played them, but of course, if you insist.
Yeah,
totally.
Sweet.
Pubes Siberian Orchestra.
Pubes Trans-Siberian
Orchestra. Trans-Pubes Siberian Orchestra.
Oh, my God.
Cool. Okay, well...
Trans-Siberian. How do you spell beer? In that. I get it. I drink beer, too.
I love the jokes that almost land.
I didn't get there.
So much. I love the joke that it hovers.
That was for you, Ryan, because I know that you've done that.
I'm an 80-20. 80% don't land, but yeah. The 20 that do.
You're listening to Tour Punisher. Coming up after the break, a shit stalagmite. This show is brought to you by Loving Fathers. Apparently, once you become a dad, you stop talking about your own music projects and you just start talking about your kids.
Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dads.
Today's episode is brought to you by Room Temperature Cheese Box. Room Temperature Cheese Box brings cruelty-free room temperature cheese to your doorstep. Choose from sweating pepper jack, slightly moist cheddar, or smoother-than-usual brie. For a limited time, use the offer code PUNISHER for 20% off your first order. Room Temperature Cheese Box. It's unrefrigerated cheese delivered to your house.
Halloween night, 2004. The rave they named Howl. This was at the new Meow Meow location that was 320 Southeast 2nd, now the home, or was the home, of Euphoria and Branks and blah, blah, blah. So this one night brought in the entirety of our monthly rent. So, of course, we said yes. And so I found myself playing janitor at my own venue for the night of this monster party. And one thing I didn't know is that there's a specific type of person that will just let a bathroom situation get going from bad to worse without letting anybody know.
Somebody high in ecstasy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So our venue, just notoriously, we had some issues with our bathrooms and how they were. I believe there were no stalls in the women's bathroom. They just were toilets lined up next to each other. Not sure, but I remember something like that. And so anybody can remind me what I don't think I remember. There might have been like a line of toilets, and then on the other side there was, but it just was a bad state. And so apparently the bathrooms in the women's women's bathrooms were all out of commission, and so there was a 15 person line to the one stall in the men's bathroom. And I think that there was maybe 2,500 people at this show or something like that. I mean, it was just people spilling out into the street next to Tazo Tea, and it was just ridiculous. A lot of neon. So I'm walking up to the bathroom line, and I'm like, what's happening here? What's going on? I mean, there should be other things, you know, other places that people can do this. And they're just happy and talking. It's like having conversations. And I just kind of cut straight to the front of the line, and I open the stall. You know, after somebody's coming out, I'm like, wait a minute, what did I just see? And literally, I opened the stall door. and there is a tower that is jetting up from the waters of the toilet, going at least 4.5 feet above the water line.
Is it a tower of shit?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't know what I was looking at first. It was like a shit flyer volcano that had emerged. And at one point, I think people were just coming to look at it. I don't think they were even going to the bathroom.
Like taking a picture with it.
Bro, check it out. Bro.
The shit volcano selfie? Yeah.
This was 2003. There was no selfie. It was just they wanted to hug it. I don't know what it was.
High five.
So I found myself, I'm just like, staring at this eye to eye with this thing, and I don't know what to do, and everybody's just kind of like staring at me like, are you gonna take care of this? And so I went downstairs, grabbed two garbage bags, you know, like giant garbage bags. One I used as kind of like a giant mitten to shove it all into the other bag.
Like a body glove.
And then here I was, like, you know, appropriate for the holidays. I'm just like this giant shit Santa Claus. And I'm walking out of the, and I think there was like applause as I was leaving with this full bag. And then I'm walking out. The first thing I see is a guy. I don't know what is when you're in mid. Are you raving at that point? There was a guy that was just
pretend
his
like
arms
you don't
were
know.
Just like his arms were wavy. He was a wavy.
For
wavy.
Those who can't see what's happening, Todd is air swimming.
Yeah, he's like gesticulating in this kind of like
a father
wavy,
of two in his
fun way.
And I just. The thought crossed my mind that I wanted to just swing this bag and hit him with it and just see what happened. But no, I didn't. I brought it down to the trash and it got taken care of.
Yeah. And you were that hero for that night.
The one who climbed Mount Vesuvius. Well, okay. You guys ever watch that movie, Look, Pooh's Talking? Pooh? The sequel?
No. Was that Mount Pubesuvio?
What about Pooh's the Boss?
well, wait. This is a perfect place to end out.
It was a case of staring at Mount Pushmore. Nope.
I mean,
and then it's still staring back at you.
I usually love it when jokes don't land, but not that one.
I took too long. I was trying to decide whether or not I wanted to say
on paper
push or
that
push.
One works. On paper it works.
Pushmore?
That would have been funnier. I'm sorry.
Mount Pushmore. Yeah.
Mount Tushmore?
Gushmore?
Flushmore. Boom.
Mount. He worked for it. He dug and he found gold after digging through the poop.
Well worth the wait.
Yeah.
Flushmore.
Mount Flushmore.
Yeah, we got there. We got there. Thanks for listening to our first ever episode of Tour Punisher. This episode was produced by myself, Noah Dunham, Ryan Soli, and Ray Rude. Sound design and editing and theme song all done by Mr. Ray Rude. We recorded this episode in sunny Portland, Oregon at Open Signal. Thank you to our guests, Todd Fadel and Jesse Bettis. And Todd wanted to do a shout out to his son. Look him up, Jasper Typical. You can find him on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, and I assume wherever you listen to music.
And this episode is also brought to you by the Ford Econo line.
They're not an official sponsor, but Ford, if you're listening...
They could be.
You could be.
Huh?
Yeah, maybe. Thanks for listening, everybody. We out! Tour Punisher!
Yo.
Are you looking at that? That's a horse. It's a miniature horse.
The fucking little Sebastian lives next to your house?
Yeah. These guys, these neighbors are crazy and they have a horse in their backyard, which I think is illegal in city limits. It's weird. It's like every once in a while, too, you hear him neigh and it's nuts. And it's like, and it's close to the bathroom right here. So sometimes I'll just be taking a shit and I'll hear, and it's like, what the fuck? scares the shit out of you, which is good when you're taking a shit.